ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Throughout this school year, we're celebrating UW-Milwaukee's 60th anniversary by taking a closer look at each of the 14 schools and colleges that make up Wisconsin's second largest university. Well, we're more than halfway through our review for the year, and today our focus is on the School of Information Studies. With more than 1,000 students, it's ranked as one of the top information study programs in the world. Our guest is the dean of the school, Tom Lipinski. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. And as you think about information studies, anyone who was on campus, maybe a number of years ago, might have remembered a different heading for the department or for the school. It was tied into library science. But boy, we've come a long way from that point in our lives where you thought of a lot of information being stored in the library. Right now, information is available everywhere.
Right. Now it's everywhere. So the problems of locating that information, of tagging it and marking it, storing it, and then making it available for easy retrieval are just compounded because now, again, as you said, the information just isn't in a physical place. It's on the internet. It's everywhere. Governments are making more and more information available and putting it online. We're seeing disciplines move to online open access storage systems and repositories. So there's just more and more information everywhere, and that means not only, as I said, locating, storing, retrieving it, but keeping it safe, keeping it secure, building interfaces so that users can, because we're in an online world, at least here in the United States, many, many people are, how do you interface with that technology? Because now it's not as simple as just walking through the door, going to the shelf and picking an item off that has information in it. You have to interface through a phone, through a tablet, through a computer. And so we study with the best mechanisms for doing that as well.
You know, as I think about my youth where they still had card catalogs in libraries, I love those. You know, you pull it open and it just seemed like you could control the world of information a little better because there was a card, it seemed, for every book, every periodical. Of course, that was nonsense. You never had all of it there. but it was it seemed more comforting than today where it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Well, there is sort of the tactile experience of holding the book, and that's why, you know, books are never going to go away. Some people want to always have that experience, but now there's different sort of tactile sensations in terms of sounds and moving images and colors and things of that sort in terms of the screen of a website or a mobile app and things of that sort. So it's just it's kind of changing, but I mean, for us, we're not digital natives, but many of our students today, especially the undergrads, they're digital natives. They don't know any other experience, and so for them to walk into the library and look for books is kind of unusual. But if you go to our library, it's just it's overrun with students because that's where they're gathering to work on collaborative projects. They're hovered around computer terminals and multi-stations. It's just a destination place for students on campus, but they're getting their information in a different way.
Yeah, I'm sure those younger digital natives are rolling their eyes as I describe the experiences that I and you and perhaps some of our other listeners had. Tom, you talk about the way in which you train people to help manage that information. Give us an idea of more exactly what the school is doing. What do these classes look like that will help you harness all of that information or data that is at our fingertips?
Sure. Well, and it does depend to some extent on which degree program you're going into. I mean, we still do, as you mentioned, have the traditional library master's, Master of Science, Master of Library and Information Science. So we're training future archivists, future librarians, other sorts of information managers. But then at the undergraduate and graduate level, we have more of our IT-oriented degrees and training students to do mobile and web app design, They're doing technology training, network administrators, information officers, any sort of technology and tech support that's really distributed across industries. So we place a lot of those students into the private sector because every company today really needs IT.
So if I learn how to manage information, say, at an insurance company, are those skills applicable for me to go work for a manufacturing company, a company that makes cars? Or do I need to learn a new set of management skills?
No, I think that the information itself is really across different fields. So, you know, you're maybe a particular company in the insurance industry that needs to support its customers through its website. Manufacturing company may need to support its customers through website as well. So being able to design the website, make it user-friendly, have communication tools built into it, update that website, I mean, those are skills that are transferable regardless of the environment that you're in.
It sounds like a lot of these jobs that you're helping educate students to move into may not have even existed, 10, 15 years ago.
That's true, and probably to some extent, the jobs that they have now will you know, they're not going to exist 10 or 15 years from now. They're going to have moved and muted again. So it's really about preparing lifelong learners. We give them the basic sets of skills and concepts, but the field will change and their field will change as well. So part of the challenge is graduating and then keep your skills fresh as an IT professional.
What about the relationship between the faculty in your school and students and the companies that are creating these systems for moving or storing information, the Microsofts and the Googles? Is there any interplay, interaction?
Absolutely. We have a couple of different programs and initiatives that really sort of try and embed and connect our students with the IT community that's out there. And one that's been very successful is our nonprofit IT. And that's a system where typically the juniors and seniors in our undergraduate program, so the older students that have a bit more skills and experiences, older in the sense of more skills, not just their age, certainly. And so we partner them with an IT professional from the community, and they work in a team, so they get that team experience. And then what we do is we have a real life problem for them to solve that is an IT problem, and it's from the nonprofit area. So we take local nonprofits. We've worked with River Keepers, for example, just a number of different groups, and these are small nonprofits that don't have the capacity to have their own IT department. And really don't have the capacity to outsource an IT job either because it's very expensive. So we take them on in a project-based setting over the course of a semester. And typically it's a website redesign or a website build. And we basically build them a website or refresh or rebuild an existing website. And so it gives our students a wonderful experience to work in a team under the tutelage of one of our faculty and a business professional, an IT professional, and then do some good for the community as well and work with clients and have to go back and forth and say, is this what you want? Is it, you know, does this get your message across? Does this highlight what you want to say the right way? And that's a real life experience. And it's been extremely successful. We've had all of our grads that have gone through that particular program really find their peach job upon graduation. And we're really excited because we've received a grant from the Greater Milwaukee Foundation to basically double our capacity for that program.
And what a great service for the community.
Absolutely. And it's really part of, as you know, UWM's mission, but the community is one of our values as a school as well. So
As you think about those future students, the ones that are going to be coming into your program, maybe in the not too distant future, do you prepare your faculty to teach the digital natives differently than perhaps some older students? I mean, you know, you talk about the fact that, you know, a lot of youngsters are walking around with cell phones and iPads, and, you know, they're handed a computer in the early grades. What does that mean for your faculty who catch them as they already are well down the road to using these technologies?
Yeah, well, and we still have a wide mix of students. We still get that young digital native. We still have the returning students. We have a large percentage of the campus's veterans population is in our school. So really students of all ages. But I think what it means for an instructor having been in the classroom last semester and teaching, especially undergraduates and a lot of digital natives, is they can't be fooled. I mean, you have to be spot on. So
words like kinda and sorta don't work.
they know, and they know when you don't know, and that's okay to learn together. But so they're a very savvy group. But they're a lot of fun to work with, and they really, I learn something from them every day when I'm in the classroom. So.
You know, when I first heard about information studies, I was thinking, oh, that must be computer programmers. Those must be computer engineers. Is there a requirement that your students who are learning how to manage information also understand the hardware, the technology that's processing these billions and billions of bits of data?
Yeah. We do teach them a bit of that, certainly the hardware. And our new master's program, for example, which is a collaboration between our school and the Department of Computer Science. Students will take some basic computer science classes and do a little bit of Python and other programming. But I think the emphasis in our school, at least in our IT degrees, is it's more applied. It's more where the technology and the user meet, and how do we get them to meet and connect. And to use information efficiently, so it's a lot of the soft skills that people come to a position like that with, not necessarily the pure programming or the hardwiring type of skills.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio today is Tom Lipinski. Tom is the dean of the School of Information Studies, and during this 60th anniversary year for the university itself, each month we're taking one of the schools and colleges and doing a deeper dive to give members of the community here a better sense of not only the services that the school provides, but also the educational opportunities and the way in which that has transformed the degrees, actually, that the university is able to offer. Tom, let's talk about degrees and some of the new programs, new opportunities you have, a new master's program that is just rolling out in the school.
Right. It was just approved by the Board of Regents last fall and a couple years in the planning stages. But as I mentioned, it's a collaboration between our school and the Department of Computer Science. And they're going to be offering 9 of the credits, and we'll be taking the remainder of the credits. But the focus is really on if you look at all the projections for the IT sector, and you look at, say, the Department of Labor, I mean, the general computer and IT area is going to experience faster than normal growth from, you know, through 2024. So that's it's a great field to go into. But our themes are going to be information security, as I mentioned, data science and data management, data analytics, and then web and mobile app design, computer user interface and how to build systems that are responsive to users' needs. So we focus on all of those and really give the students a smattering in each. If anybody's used or bought anything online, you know that, you know, having a good website or a mobile app that works as good as the website, or having your information be secure. A week doesn't seem to go by where there's some other leak that's happened or some other crack in some other list of names that got released. So these are all key areas in the IT sector. And the new master's degree will prepare students to do that. If they want to sort of beef up their skills and have the credentials, it's a great degree. If they're a returning student, it's another good degree. Even without an IT background, we can do some preparatory classes, and a student can move into those. And so there's just really lots of opportunities in that IT area, and especially for a student who has a lot of experience in the field but maybe even doesn't have that first degree. Our undergraduate degree is offered through what's known as the FLEX program, competency-based assessments. So we've had students basically do their degree in a shorter amount of time because they're not sitting in a course where the time period is fixed, and the learning might be variable, but they're in rather a competency-based system where the time frame is completely open and the learning is constant. So if they can move through the material in a course in 4 weeks instead of the traditional 15 or 16, then they can move on to the next course. And maybe they take a little longer. Maybe they take 2 weeks on the next one and 2 months on the next one. That's fine. They move at their own pace. But it allows someone with a lot of experience to bring that experience into the classroom, be assessed for it, be assessed that they're competent in that. And why have make a student like that sit through 16 weeks of a semester when they know half of the material already?
You know, I'm thinking of some of the IT people that I've worked with, both in business and at the university over the years, and I'm really impressed at how many of them have become so smart at managing information systems, and they don't have a college degree. They were inclined to move in that right. area. And I suspect in some cases, in fact, I know in some cases, there was a need in the company and somebody raised their hand and said, yeah, I can figure that out. And before you know it, they've got a promotion and they're on their right. way with a career. But still, in order to really advance yourself professionally, getting that ticket punched with the degree is still the gold standard.
Right. The credential is still important. And you know, as time goes on, I think we've seen this in many disciplines that, you know, that the initial bachelor's of science was the degree, and now it's even the master's, you know, and so
or
you even,
it's just assumed
you even
that
need
that
graduate
that.
Degree to move even farther. So those students and those professionals that have that kind of experience. The IT field is a great one to introduce sort of this competency-based assessment to. It's not going to work in all fields, but certainly in the IT area where, as you said, sometimes through just experience and additional certifications and training, someone has quite a bit of experience over the years, so they just don't have that credential.
We hear a lot about hacking. We hear about WikiLeaks, the way in which people who do have access to information share it, release it in ways that were never intended, with sometimes really, really bad consequences. People's losing the privacy of information that deals with their health or mental status or financially, seeing your checking account suddenly losing some dollars. Is there any way that as you educate students, as you bring people in and teach them these skills, are there any courses on the ethics of using information, on you know, how do you sort out and find the people who are good, moral people and are not going to take advantage of the knowledge they have that could open up the world to data that they shouldn't be out there?
Right, and that's a part of our school that has evolved, I think, out of its library roots, which had very strong code of professional ethics. And so we bring that into the IT field. And specifically, we have, for example, our Center for Information Policy Research, which Professor Michael Zimmer directs. And he's working on several projects right now on privacy and ethics. We have several courses on information ethics, on legal aspects of information. We're developing a new course on ethical hacking. So in the sense that a student can learn about security systems and learn about how to test them and challenge them, but to do it in an ethical way, not in sort of the pernicious sort of, I'm going to see if I can hack this system just to bring it down. And so those
just to show the man that
right,
I can do it.
Those kinds of concepts are developing. And so I think we do bring a good sense of values and ethics really across our curriculum. But as you asked, we have specific courses that respond to those issues as well.
How about legal courses? Is there also the law of information?
Absolutely. We have a series of courses in our archives program that are specific to archives. I teach a course in our existing master's program, the old master's program, for library and information managers. And then we have a new IT law class as well that I teach for the undergraduates, and that's a broader range of issues. So we do really teach them, you know, the proper uses of technology and to be a little reflective about, you know, you have all these wonderful skill sets, but how does that intersect with either things like ethics, as you mentioned, or things like the law, and what are the boundaries of each?
Right. We should give a shout out to you. I should give a shout out because you really are quite the expert on intellectual property. In fact, serving as a delegate to the World Intellectual Property Organization. Tell us about that work.
Sure. So the World Intellectual Property Organization is located in Geneva, and it deals with patent, trademarks, and copyrights. And the area that I'm most interested in is copyrights. And so there is an NGO known as IFLA, or the International Federation.
Non-governmental organization.
So, and it's IFLA, and it's the International Federation of Library Associations. And they send a delegation to IFLA to WIPL twice a year. And there's a subcommittee that deals with copyright issues. It meets usually in late spring, so I'll be going there this May and then sometime in fall. And we're trying to sort of lobby, if you will, the member states' delegates to consider possibly an international instrument specifically for libraries and archives and museums that would allow their users and those institutions themselves to have additional use rights. Our laws are pretty good in this country. They're fairly robust. We've been doing copyright for a long time, since 1790. But many countries of the world are still developing, and their laws are still developing, and they have an adequate legal infrastructures to support that type of knowledge economy that we've just come to expect here in the United States. One of the recent successes that IFLA has had at WIPO is the Marrakesh Treaty for the print disabled. And our law, what's known as the Chaffee Amendment, it's existed for a long time, and it supported library services to the print disabled fairly well. But many countries in the world had nothing like that. So part of the idea internationally is to get sort of that baseline and not take anybody down in terms of their law, but trying to bring the rest of the world up onto sort of an equal playing field.
Are there penalties that do exist? I know there are penalties here for violating copyright law, but what power or what influence could an author have to protect their intellectual property from being misused in a country like China or Vietnam or Africa?
Right. Well, and you know, part of the movement is to try and have all the countries of the world be a member state within WIPO. That's not the case. Some countries are not, but most are. And those countries that aren't, then another arm of sort of politics is triggered, and it's often through trade negotiations, then intellectual property enforcement is sort of put on part of that negotiating
table
as well.
You're talking about leverage.
Yes, leverage, leveraging things.
Making it clear it's in their interest.
Absolutely, right.
To respect and right. Protect other people's rights.
Because the simplest way to sort of think about it is that, you know, if I have intellectual property rights here and somebody is using my intellectual property in China, then I have to rely on China's laws to enforce my rights. That's sort of the way it works. So the place where you're using the work is the law that gets enforced. So that's why we want to try and bring all the countries up to some baseline of standards. So as an author or as a patent holder, I can rest assured that whether my work is read and used, if it's a book in Canada or Mexico or China or you know the Netherland Antilles, that there's sort of going to be a base understanding of what a person can do with it and what they can't do with it. And we achieve that through harmonization of laws across the globe.
We've been talking a lot about the ways in which information studies have evolved from those early days of training librarians, but let's go all the way back to the beginning. Are you still training librarians in the same fashion that you did 10 or 20 years ago?
Well, we're still training librarians. I think certainly the skill sets have changed as the field has evolved. And more technology is brought into that classroom, that traditional classroom of old. So students will still be learning about the organization of information and cataloging and call numbers and things of that sort. But now there's just a tremendous amount of technology in libraries. And also the mindset, I think, maybe has changed. Think about libraries as not just a place where there are books, but library is a place. And it could be many things to many people. It can be a literacy center. It can be an innovation hub. It can be an incubator for small businesses. It can be so many different types of things that maybe we never thought of 20, 30, 40 years ago. Or, as you mentioned, UWM celebrating its 60th anniversary. We're celebrating our 50th. We're winding up a year of celebration. The school was founded in 1966. And, you know, libraries look much different then than certainly they do now.
Are the users a factor here in influencing how you teach? Do you have to educate librarians, information experts, in how to socialize with people who may walk in with a whole different set of experiences because of that phone or that laptop?
Absolutely. And when we talk to employers, one of the skills that they continually ask for is the soft skill, is the communication skills. Because as I said, not only because the library is so many things to so many people now and so many different things than it used to be historically, but I think also because, as you mentioned, the user populations and the demographics are changing of the United States now. So you have new immigrant populations coming into the country, new challenges. You have libraries being revitalized. If you just look around the city of Milwaukee, the renovations that are taking place and the new sort of information centers that are being built as part of the Milwaukee Public Library are just wonderful examples of translating sort of those traditional skills into really new environments.
How exciting. Well, Tom, we appreciate you taking time to share the story of School of Information Studies. It's one of those 14 chapters in the Academy of University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, which, as you mentioned, is celebrating its 60th anniversary. And we wish you and your colleagues the best as you try to keep up to this amazing, amazing evolution of information management and information production.
Great, Tom. It's been great talking to you. And as I said, it's such an exciting field that there's just never a dull moment, and the best is still yet to come.
And check out that new master's program.
Absolutely.
School of Information Studies. Tom Lipinski, the dean of the school, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.